And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hey, Sondra, how are you today?
Hey, Kenny, I'm doing okay. I'm fine. There is nothing exciting to report. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Nothing really exciting to report. Hungover to fuck. I'm very hungover.
Same currently.
I'm not drinking. I say this right. I'm fucking sitting with a vodka right now. I've got a problem.
I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink at all as I am currently drinking. I'm not drinking. I literally just woke up. So I have some water next to me. I'm okay. I'm not like, I drank water after I drank copious amounts of beer last night. So it's not like I'm dying or anything.
Because it is a Saturday night at 6:15, I should add. It's not like I'm drinking it like 9 a.m. which is fine too, actually. Like, don't shit on people for drinking at 9 a.m. just
probably, no, like, sometimes these things happen.
So anyway, there is lots to talk about. As always, I should mention at the top here that we will be recording next week's Inside the Ropes podcast on the Sunday, and probably the one after that as well, because the next 2 weeks AEW is on the Saturday night. So we figure it's, even though it's not the head-to-head shows, you know, we can talk about them both then. So
it'd be good to be able to talk about AEW, like, recording before it happens. We could do it Inside the Ropes without it, but then, like, we'd have to cover it somehow, but then it'd be on the Overrun, which would be great, because then maybe people would sign up to Patreon to listen to us. But, like, at the same time, I don't know,
it's a lot. So anyways, we've got lots to talk about. I guess one of the big topics that everybody is talking about is that the WWE are going to be running the Amway Center in Orlando for potentially the rest of the year, and there's not going to be fans, but there is going to be virtual fans.
Is it like confirmed that there are going to be virtual fans, or is that like a rumor?
Michael Cole speculated about it on SmackDown, which makes me think it's
happening. Oh, did he?
So, I mean, the NBA have done it, and it's been pretty successful there.
So, how have they? Because I haven't, like, you know, my limited sports knowledge. Like, what have the NBA done? Do they have, like, do they just, like, insert, like, CGI people? Or do they have, like, screens with Zoom calls? Like, how, what do they mean by virtual fans?
I was trying to find the best photo to show you. So, I'm going to...
Can we get, like, 8-bit fans, like a video game?
I'm going to send you a photo right now of... Okay. Virtual NBA. I'm just curious to see what you think. I mean, because this is what SummerSlam is essentially going to look like, I think. I'm sending it to you now.
I'm anxiously awaiting this photo. Let's see. So, huh. It's just a screen with, like...
So it's a screen with those people at home, but they are, like, mic'd. So, like, it's like they will make noise.
So are they, like, on a call or whatever, and then they've superimposed them onto the screen? Is that what's happening?
Well, I feel like, because the photo that we're looking at, everybody, if you just Google NBA virtual fans, there's an article by QZ.com or QZ.com, Quartz, and they've got a photo of an LA Lakers NBA game. And what it looks like is the fans have been superimposed onto, like, certain chairs.
Yeah, because it looks like they're they have put fans' images on chairs. It doesn't look like a boxy, like, Zoom call screen that for some reason has just become part of our normal lives in 2020. Like, I don't know. That it's so strange to me. Like, this year is just very strange, which is an understatement of all understatements. But, like, yeah, it looks like they've superimposed them onto chairs, but they're all just on a screen.
So talk me through, what do you think... do you think this is a good move? Do you think that, I mean, I know you've not really been that bothered about them being at the PC, but do you think that having real fans on screens and kind of in some way being able to replicate people being there is a good move? Or, I mean, I know it's hard to say because we've not seen it yet.
I mean, I'm here for it. Like, I don't really care one way or the other, to be honest. Like, I'm fine with the plants and the fans being like trainees who are told to cheer and boo and stuff. Like, that hasn't really bothered me. I think the very silent WWE shows earlier on felt more like absurdist theater than wrestling in a lot of ways. But since they've added some people for some crowd noise, and AEW has been doing it since the beginning, like having some people in the crowd, it hasn't bothered me. But the idea of virtual fans, just because it seems like such a weird thing, and it seems like such a weird obstacle to have to overcome, like, I'm so curious what it's going to look like. Like, I kind of can't wait for SummerSlam just because I want to know what SummerSlam is going to look like at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to get a peek at it because the first show coming from the Amway Center is going to be SmackDown next week, right before SummerSlam.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
But, like, I am here for it. Like, I feel like a lot of people are really sick of these kind of, you know, shows the way they have been, right? People just are desperate to get a bit of atmosphere back. It shows, and if they can do these virtual fan things, then I mean the comedy factor potentially, like, because I think it's gonna be that you can apply to be a virtual fan. I think you should apply, Sandra. I really
oh my
think
gosh I would love to be a virtual fan. Like, I'm very expressive.
You are.
I have thoughts, you know.
You could wear an Inside the Ropes t-shirt to rep the brand.
I could wear an Inside the Ropes t-shirt. I could get the brand out there. You know, I'm relatively pretty, so I wouldn't be, like,
I'd do you.
Rejected outright. Because I feel like they would probably have bias toward, like, attractive people because they're WWE, so of course they would. I don't know. Like, I would love to be a virtual fan, I'm not going to lie. I think it sounds fun.
Oh, yeah. I would 100% be into that, for sure. But I guess we'll see what happens when this takes place next week. I'm kind of here for it. Like, I think it's exciting. It makes... I mean, them in an arena is going to be odd, but then at least, like, maybe we'll get some pyro at SummerSlam. That would be nice.
Are we going to get pyro? Like, if we do, that would be great. I just don't want to get your hopes up too high, and I do not want to get Oliver's hopes up too high.
That is true.
With mentioning of the pyro word, because then if there's not pyro, then I just don't want you to be disappointed.
And he will go in a huff.
Yes.
So before we talk about AEW and NXT, there's a load of kind of different little news things I thought we'd bring up. I don't think we mentioned it in the podcast, but Kimberly has signed with Impact, and I wondered if that was something that you had some thoughts on, given that you are a big old fan of hers.
I am a big old fan of hers, and I'm incredibly happy for her. It's so many people that are signed to Impact now are, like, some of my faves, and I'm like, damn it, like, I'm going to have to start watching Impact probably, because... most of that roster, it seems like most of the people I see talked about are, like, people that I've seen live and people that I am a big fan of. And I really like their roster, and it sounds like they're doing some great stuff. I haven't really checked them out because I almost kind of don't want to get started down that rabbit hole. Cause, like, if I add in another wrestling show, then that's, like, another wrestling show to watch and keep up with and be committed to. And that's, you know, like, that's a lot. But I'm super happy for her. I think she definitely deserves it. She's put in the work. She's great. She's awesome. You know, and Impact obviously have intergender matches from time to time. I don't think it's their norm necessarily, but I mean, having Tessa Blanchard as their actual champion for a while was a very big deal. And I mean, Kimberly was the first female Chikara Grand Champion, and she's done intergender matches and stuff for a long time. So I'm super happy for her. Super happy about this because she's awesome.
I feel like Impact is kind of on the quiet developing a pretty good women's division.
No, they're awesome. Like, they have so many good talents there.
And she was, because what was her name in WWE again? I forget. Was it Abby Laith?
Abby Laith, yes.
How did I remember that?
I have no idea.
I don't, you know, I swear I didn't have it in front of me. But also, I mean, we would be remiss to not at least mention, because we are big fans of fashion, Sondra.
Yes, correct.
We follow the trends. We don't actually replicate them in how we dress, but we do like to judge everyone else. No.
We like to judge other people more than we like to take the criticisms on ourselves, for sure.
I mean, to me, that's life. That's what you do.
I agree.
That's what the people say. On SmackDown, Braun Strowman debuted a new look.
He got rid of his hair.
He shaved his head. So I wanted to know what you thought about it. What do you make of him shaving his head?
I think it's probably a good choice. I think that his hair was thinning severely. Mm-hmm. And I was a fan of his side shave look. Like when he wasn't like Wyatt Family Braun Strowman anymore with like the fluffy hair, but when he was like, I'm a monster and I'm going to kill jobbers for ages. When he debuted that side shave, I thought that was a really good look for him. But I think his battle with his hair was one that he was losing. And I think the no hair look looks good on him. Like, he still has the beard to look big and foreboding and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, no, I think it is a good choice for him. I don't think his hair was nearly as dire as like Baron Corbin's right before Baron Corbin shaved his, but you know, like I think it was probably time, and I think he looks great.
Yeah, I'm digging the look a lot. I think that, I mean, he had, over the last few years, you could see that his hair was clinging on for dear life.
Yes.
Like, but he did a decent enough job in trying to, you know, work with it, but the battle was starting to be lost. So yeah, I think he looks more badass actually with the bald head.
Yeah, it suits him. It suits him for sure.
I can't decide whether him kind of turning what looks like he turned heel and sort of gorilla pressing Alexa Bliss.
Like, is that what that was? Was that a heel turn? Has he joined Bray Wyatt? I actually did watch SmackDown. Like, not all of it, but like the last...
Well, I mean,
like half hour or so of it. And when he said everyone who comes into contact with the Fiend gets changed, and he was like, including you, but like also including Braun Strowman, right? Like, he was being a very different Braun Strowman and doing the whole like laughing into the camera, and then the Fiend was laughing into the camera, and there were lots of lights, and I honestly have no idea what's going on, but I'm kind of here for the madness. Like, how is this being received online? Because I haven't really looked.
I've not really looked either. I think people are just very confused.
Where I'm at. I'm just kind of like, okay, this is happening. Yeah, like, I can't say that it enticed me to, like, want to watch more, but also I'm like, okay, Wyatt Family shenanigans and Alexa Bliss is getting gorilla pressed. But, like, I was mad he didn't just chuck her. Why did he hold her up for so long?
He should have chucked her, for sure.
Because when he chucked her, like, then the lights went out, obviously. Like, Alexa Bliss can take a bump from that height, right? Like, her finish is Twisted Bliss, and it's, like, from the top rope, and
I mean,
she regularly takes bumps from that height.
You know the answer to this. It is not that she could not take the bump. It is that they did not want to be seen to have a man gorilla press a woman out of the ring.
Yeah, but this is what I say, though, when we talk about intergender wrestling and, like, their aversion to it limiting possibilities. You can't, like, walk right up to that door and then just have him hold her up in the air forever, because that just looks stupid. Like, what are you doing? Like, there was the one moment where he like, ran at the ropes like he was going to chuck her, and then music happened and he stopped, like, something had, like, stopped him from doing it. And I'm like, nothing. No one has confronted you, sir. Like, it was just a noise.
I mean, the thing that I'm kind of like, I don't mind men, women angles. Like, I like them. I've seen them loads of times. It's not that I'm adverse to it, but it's just weird that it's like, we can do all this different stuff, but we can't have him chuck her off, you know, over the top rope. I mean, the idea that Strowman's kind of,
he did finally, like, right before the lights went out, he did, like, throw her. But then they had the lights go out, so you didn't see her, like, fall.
Yeah, he definitely did chuck her, for sure. But I was going to... but yeah, and the idea that he's kind of given Bray, or the Fiend, a taste of his own medicine, I do like that. That's quite a fun way to play it. So I'm kind of into it. I mean, I don't know how either of them are going to come out of this better. And I feel like everyone who works for the Fiend comes out of it worse. But I'm here for the chaos.
I'm here for the chaos, too. It's very strange. You know that I get very in my Wyatt family feelings, and it goes either way, right? Like, it's either, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever, because it's referencing this one piece of Wyatt family canon from 2014 when he cut this one promo on this one show and I'm so in love with it, or I'm just like, wow, you're terrible. And I have not decided what this angle is yet. The thing is, I feel like WWE wants to put Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman together because they're like, we have such the potential for a really cool story here. But I do not trust that they have a way to end it properly. And I think that is going to be the problem. But it seems like Braun Strowman kind of joined Bray Wyatt at the end of SmackDown, right? Like, because he was all like cackling and then chucked Alexa Bliss, and the Fiend was laughing at Alexa Bliss, and they were like, ha ha ha, you're a lady and we don't like you. Like, I don't really understand what all that was, but I think they're on the same side. Like, are they a tag team now?
I mean, they seem to be bringing up their past on the Mixed Match Challenge. I mean, I would have bet you, like, my entire wrestling collection that Mixed Match Challenge would never be used in a storyline. But you
know, no, it's too good. Like, Team Little Big is way too good not to use here, and I was happy to see that footage actually on the show.
Oh no, and what I'm meaning by that is, like, I never thought they would actually follow up with something like that. Like, I never thought that would come into the ether of what was going on. But yeah, so I mean, Fiend and Strowman at SummerSlam, interesting. But speaking of SummerSlam, the big match that people are talking about is it's going to be Sonya Deville versus Mandy Rose, hair versus hair match. That I think this is the first time since, I think
it's what, Molly Holly
and Victoria at WrestleMania 20, so 16 years. I would be gobsmacked if you were not into this.
I'm so into this. Are you kidding me? I'm so into this. I think it's great. Because Mandy Rose's hair is cut at this point, right? Like, she has it shorter, like, because her extensions are out, and Sonya cut her hair and it was very vicious. I love this. I think the story between the two of them is great. I think the fire in, because I haven't seen a ton of it. I did switch on last night and I saw Sonya's promo that was like accepting the challenge from Mandy Rose. And I thought Sonya had great fire behind her. I thought she was just like, what, you tried to ruin my life? I'm going to ruin yours. I'm going to take your hair and it's going to be great. I don't know, like, and I don't know who's going to win it. I have no idea. Like, a bald Mandy Rose would be very interesting because she is so much about looks, which I know has fed into the story a lot. I think if Sonya Deville is rocking, like, a shaved head and just looks completely badass with no hair, then I'm going to just love her more. I'm so here for this. I think it's great. Like, that's the match I'm honestly looking forward to the most on SummerSlam at this point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm into it. I think it kind of cooled down a little bit, the storyline, but it seems like it's coming back now, and it's just it's going to be a fun match, and I think they kind of deserve to have a big moment like this since they didn't get one at WrestleMania because it was in a unit, but you know, good for them. So we should mention before we talk about NXT itself, the return of Velveteen Dream. How do you feel about the return of Velveteen Dream?
Not incredibly great. Like, it's... I don't feel great about it. I thought he was done. I thought he was off our TVs. Even just as a character, Velveteen Dream had cooled off for me a lot. And you know that. Like, after the Roderick Strong story, I was just kind of like, no, I don't know if I feel so great about you. And I know that he returned and I know that he turned heel. And I think that is a new, interesting direction for him. I think, like, in light of some of the allegations of surrounding him, it's hard to be like, yeah, this is a great idea.
Yeah, it's rough because we don't know the ins and outs of the accusations and stuff. So you kind of have to take it at good faith that it's been investigated. And one of the guys who has accused has said that he was never contacted. It's murky. It's very murky.
It's murky. And I mean, again, like, I am not going to be surprised at WWE not taking things seriously necessarily. And I'm not saying that they're not. Like, they have taken action on other people who have been found to be problematic in some ways. But I don't know. Like, I knew that he had come back because I watched NXT just yesterday, on the Friday. So I had seen pictures of him, like, just existing, basically. And I knew that he came back. So I knew that he was, like, the mystery opponent at the end of the show and stuff. And I don't know. Like, just... I wondered why certain tweets were resurfacing from June. And then when I found out he came back on the show, I was like, ah, that would be why. And it makes me feel icky. And I'm not a huge fan of it. And it just, I don't know, like, it doesn't seem like a great idea.
Do you think that you can you personally separate, would you be able to separate sort of the real life stuff from watching the character on TV, or do you think that that's going to be difficult to try and separate it?
I think it's going to be difficult in this instance, like, especially because WWE is like, we are committed to making sure that our people aren't pedos, you know, like, that kind of stuff. And it's going to be tough for me in this instance, I feel. And I don't think it helps that I also don't like the character anymore as much. And I did. Like, remember when we loved Velveteen Dream and thought he was the best ever? Remember those days?
Those were the days, man. They were.
I feel like these are different days.
I can separate stuff pretty well. So, like, I'll be able to watch it pretty easily. It's not going to be something that's going to be too difficult for me to try and maneuver. But I think that the difficulty that they've got is that by bringing him back, and I'm not even saying he's guilty, I'm just, you know, spitballing, but, like, it doesn't send a great message that it doesn't really seem like anything happened. Like, I know there's been stories out this week about he gets preferential treatment and that, but, I mean, preferential treatment happens all, it's nice to see a preferential treatment for a black guy for once. That's nice.
Well, that's true.
At least I'm trying to find a silver lining somewhere, folks.
Does it have to be this one?
But, you know, we'll get into... I mean, well, let's talk about it first. He is the mystery third guy in the qualifier for the ladder match at TakeOver, which I don't know how many people are in it. I still don't know. I don't understand.
It's five. Who are I want to say I saw five people on a graphic at one point.
And I don't know who the five are.
Well, because we don't know. Because remember, because all the people who didn't take a pinfall still have to fight. And then they're going to be in it too.
I feel like NXT has done this thing in the last kind of year or so where it's just got really confusing. Like, so many times during the Cruiserweight tournament, I was like, right, what group are we in now? Who's getting the last chance? Like, and I couldn't keep up with it. And with
because Dexter Lumis was supposed to be in the ladder match and then now he's injured or something, question mark? I don't really know.
Yeah, but like Regal last week, when Regal was explaining that, it was the... So it's not Regal's fault. He was explaining it, but the graphic didn't really help with what he was saying. So it ended up being more confusing because he was talking about it as if there's four people in the match, but there was a graphic of five.
Because I feel like... Well, because we had four... We had four triple threats, right? So
no, there was three initially.
Right, but I'm saying, like, now we have four triple threats.
Yeah. Because in the match, we
have Bronson Reed is in the match for sure.
Cameron Grimes.
I love Cameron Grimes. We'll talk about Cameron Grimes. I think he's just so good. Remember when I thought, oh, all he does is wear a hat? These are different days, too, and I like Cameron Grimes a lot. I think that he has gotten so much better. Who else is in it? Because Finn Balor's not, because he's in the match next week because he didn't get pinned or submitted.
Yes. So the current lineup in the ladder match is Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, Cameron Grimes, and then the last two spots are between Johnny Gargano and Ridge Holland and Finn Balor or Velveteen Dream. So that's how it's working out.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, because like, because they need to fight because they didn't take a pinfall, and apparently that's like the rules of this thing. Now, I don't know. It's very confusing. It's a very confusing situation, but I don't know. The ladder match should be good.
Yeah, the ladder match should. I mean, I don't know if it's going to reach the heights of, the North American ladder match from New
I just
Orleans.
don't know that we should set our sights that high.
I know. That was like the
Because that
perfect
match was
match.
incredible. And I remember sitting next to Molly Spartan and her being like, "Who do you want to win?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I love them all." And she was like, "No, you can't, you need to pick someone." And this is like, I think that was one of the first times she had ever like watched wrestling with me and
Oh,
didn't
so she didn't.
understand.
Yeah, she didn't get it.
Yeah, and I was just like, "I don't know." She's like, "Okay, do you want Killian Dane or EC3?" And I'm like, EC3, I guess. She's just like, okay. And I think I settled on I wanted EC3 to win, like at the end of all of her questioning. But she was just kind of like, what is wrong with you?
But the thing is, you're a gray strokes person, and she is a black and white person, and black and white people never understand gray people, and gray people feel very attacked by black and white people.
Yes. I'm just like, I love them all, though. They're all so good.
Yep, she would have hated that. So, but anyway, so the main event of this show was Kushida, Cameron Grimes, and Velveteen Dream was the mystery third guy. And in the end, Cameron Grimes pinned Kushida, and then Velveteen Dream, I think, turned heel after the match by
Well,
attacking
yeah, I
Kushida.
mean, that was definitely a
Like,
heel turn
so.
because he attacked Kushida and then stood up and said to the camera, "The dream is not over, it never is," or something like that.
But then the thing is, I just need to get a little bit excited for a second. Next week, I get to see Velveteen Dream versus Finn Balor.
Yes, in a battle of the abs.
I do
The
want.
match that we were supposed to get ages ago, and then it just never happened.
I also want to say, just from. And I don't say this a lot, so I feel like I should say it. This was my favorite NXT episode in months.
It was great.
Months and months and months and months and months. Because
I
it
feel like
was
I
like.
enjoyed NXT more than AEW for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, because they were, they've got their destination of takeover. They know they need to build the matches, and everything was like, there was a direction, and it felt a lot of times it doesn't feel there is a direction. I know we talk about that quite a lot, that like AEW's always got the matches that are set up, and it's a long story. But sometimes with NXT, it kind of feels like it's stuff that you could easily miss. But this was not the case. So let's go through some of the show. We had Drake Maverick versus Killian Dane. Unfortunately, in the battle of who could possibly care,
Well, I mean,
because.
it's not like the match actually happened,
Well, no,
so.
it started, and then Undisputed
Which
Era.
I was quite looking forward to Killian Dane versus Drake Maverick. Like, I know that neither one of them are necessarily top tier and incredibly important on NXT right now, but I was like, oh, I have no idea why this match is happening, but I'm here for it. And then it turns out that it was only so that Undisputed Era could come and attack them. When they're the baby faces in this Pat McAfee feud? Question mark.
No, but so Drake Maverick and Killian Dane. I mean, Killian Dane needs to leave.
Yes,
Leave.
correct.
Because. But look, this is the luck of the draw. When you hire 400 people, not everybody is going to be a big star because you either can't find the right thing for them or it just doesn't fit. And he's a really talented guy, so I think that if he left, he would be a very. He could go to like Impact and do really well. Like that's
Oh,
the kind of.
absolutely. I mean, I would say Kushida is going down more the Killian Dane road at this point too. And it's unfortunate because I really like Killian Dane and I really like Kushida. Both of them are great and
Yeah.
they don't really feel like they're doing a whole lot here in NXT right now.
Yeah, it's so they have this match, well, they start to have this match, and then obviously, Undisputed Era turn up, they batter them, and then Adam Cole cut this like really fiery promo, and I thought he delivered it really well. And the whole, it works for me. I don't know why, but it really works for me. The idea that Pat McAfee, like, did you see one of the interviews that he did? I don't know where he did it, but I just read it, and he was, I think it was on his ESPN show, and he basically like talked about other sportsmen who've tried to wrestle,
I
and
mean,
he.
he did shit on Tyson Fury, which I
Oh
appreciate.
yeah, so like what I like is that he's someone who you can already tell that he, like, he's invested in doing this. And he's trying to.
And you can tell
make...
he's a wrestling fan. Like, and he's. I feel like he's doing the right things. It just isn't for me.
Yeah. But I think he's doing a really good job. And I think the idea of, like, Adam Cole being the kind of, like, Mr. NXT guy and then this wanker coming in who thinks he's above it all, it's just a really easy story. And I think it's good. And this is my favorite thing that Adam Cole has maybe ever done. So. I'm very happy that finally he's doing something for me and I don't need to watch him wrestle for 45 minutes. So I'm very excited. So yeah, I love this.
It worked a little bit better for me this week than it did last week, but I still question the alignments because I'm like, okay, if Adam Cole is the babyface, then why are Undisputed Era coming in and attacking Drake Maverick and Killian Dane? That's not a babyface move. And I know that there are shades of gray and that people can be kind of in between and stuff, but it just, like, that's something that I question. Like, why was it so important for you to attack Drake Maverick and Killian Dane? Like, that's a dick move. That doesn't make me want to cheer for you. I wanted to see that match, and now you've interrupted my fun.
But then, I mean, babyfaces have done that since the beginning of time.
Yes, and I hate it every time. At least I'm consistent in that.
You are consistent with that one, I'll give you that. But, like, I mean, I think the thing that Adam Cole did here for me that made him a convincing babyface was that he's fighting for NXT.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... And I think that comes through. And
I mean, Adam Cole's promo was good. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm disparaging it. I can't say that I am really looking forward to Pat McAfee, who, to me, is just, like, the mouthy dude from the pre-show. Versus Adam Cole, but, like, that's fine. Like, mm-hmm. You are into it because you think that it is big box office. I know other people are into it because they're like, no, it's great, and he's defending wrestling and all this stuff. And I understand the story.
Well, I mean, for me, it's not even that it's big box office, which it is, and I do like that element of it, but it's like, I mean, Tyson Fury was supposed to be a big box office, and I hated that because he was rubbish. I think the reason this works for me is because you can tell Pat McAfee really cares about what he's doing, he's really into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this to just, like, make you roll your eyes or whatever, but, like, genuinely, it's the match I'm looking forward to most at TakeOver. Like, 100%.
No, I know. You said that to me the other day, and I was like, we are very different wrestling fans, and that is fine. Like, I'm happy that you're excited about it, genuinely.
And I'm more
into it this week than I was last week, so at least they're kind of... I think they're telling the story well.
Yeah, Ollie was like, Kenny, you're excited about Pat McAfee. That's where we are now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is our lives now.
This is our lives. And elsewhere on the show, what else do we have here? We saw Damian Priest and Bronson Reed have a big old hoss fight that Bronson Reed managed to win.
It was great. I was super surprised that Bronson Reed beat Damian Priest. I don't know why I was surprised by that, because it seems like they're building up Bronson Reed a lot.
He needed the win, I think.
I was surprised and pleased.
Yeah, I think
I'm a lot more into Bronson Reed than I am Damian Priest at this point.
I think, like, Damian Priest has done so much stuff that, like, I feel like Bronson Reed really needed the win, get into the, mm-hmm. the ladder match. So I think it was a good call. So that was fun on the show. They had this promo, like an Io Shirai promo. She talked about Dakota Kai and, you know, beating up Tegan Knox, and she's a manipulator. And, you know, she sees her for what she is, and...
There was one bit in the promo where she was like, before Dakota Kai attacked Tegan Knox, no one knew who Dakota Kai was. And I was like, ooh. Like, I mean, that's not entirely true, but also, what a mean thing to say.
I mean, yeah, you know, I love a wee bit of mean. Wee bit of mean.
Of course.
Sets it off. So yeah, they're building that.
Because they had the Dakota Kai one earlier in the show too, Dakota talking about Io Shirai and kind of explaining herself. I thought these video packages were great. Like, it did make me look forward to Dakota Kai versus Io Shirai a lot more.
Yeah, and even though, like, I still probably would prefer if it was the triple threat over it being this one, but I think they did a good job in sort of having these video packages make you feel... This will be a big test for Dakota Kai, I think, because she's not really had the killer match yet. Like, mm-hmm. she's not... And it's like... I remember when Io Shirai and Candice LeRae had, like, one of the best women's matches I've ever seen in my life. And I didn't expect it. So I'm hoping that, like, I mean, one of those two elements is in this match. So
uh-huh.
if you can't have a great match with Io Shirai, then but maybe they don't gel.
But Dakota Kai is really good. Like, she's very, very good. And
she is. She's just not had the right situation. Because, like, the Tegan Knox thing never really fit. Hopefully this is the situation that's going to make her be able to really shine.
Yeah, because they just booked the Tegan Knox thing so weirdly that it didn't really make sense. But, like, in defense of not the triple threat, if we were having the triple threat, we would not be getting Rhea Ripley versus Mercedes Martinez, which is straight from my hopes and dreams.
That
and
is
I
true. That is great.
Just melt into a pile of hard eyes when I see the two of them confront one another. Like, do you understand how directly from my hopes and dreams this match is?
I mean, and then, you know, they have the tag match where Mercedes Martinez and Aaliyah beat Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. And then Rhea comes out, and you just want to see, I mean, when Ripley runs in and just starts battering Mercedes Martinez, and then Shotzi runs out and kind of evens up the numbers. Like, you kind of felt a little bit ripped off because you're like, I want to see Rhea Ripley and Mercedes Martinez, like, fight. But obviously they're building to that. So yeah, I do like they're doing that. And it's some. I think Mercedes Martinez needs that. So,
Feels like a big deal. Like, because I was a little bit worried when she was like, right, I'm in the Robert Stone brand now. I was like, oh no, like, are you just going to, like, not be a badass, or what's going to happen here? I mean, her explanation of joining the Robert Stone brand obviously made her look like a badass, but I thought this was great. Like, the tag match was not necessarily great. Like, it was chaotic, I will say. Like, I enjoyed Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro versus Mercedes Martinez and Aaliyah, but I can't say that it was, like, objectively good. But it felt like it had fire to it, and it felt like Mercedes wanted to kill them. So I appreciated that part of it. And Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro are just so incredibly likable. So to see Mercedes being like, you are terrible and I'm going to beat you up, is great. But yeah, that face off with Mercedes and Rhea, I'm just like, give it to me, inject it straight into my veins forever.
It's very good. So yeah, I mean, that also was hitting all cylinders. The Garganos had their dinner thing, which actually worked better for me here than it usually does.
Candace in a pink tracksuit talking to a dog. Like, she's just going full supervillain at this point.
Yeah, they're just bonkers. But like, what was he called? He called Bronson Reed Thick Boy. Which I just died at. That was a great line.
He also called himself the Wednesday Knight.
Yeah, like, I feel like he didn't finish the sentence. The Wednesday Knight what?
No, the Wednesday Knight, like K-N-I-G-H-T.
Oh, because the Wednesday Knight.
Because they were talking
Knight.
About fairy tales. He was like, the Got Wednesday it. Knight is going to swoop in. And it was wordplay, Kenny.
It was wordplay, and I didn't get it. And that's on me, ladies and gentlemen, not him. But yeah, no, that was even fun. And then obviously the main event was really good as well.
Like, can we talk about Legado del Fantasma too? Like, I'm sorry, I really kind of loved everything on this episode of NXT.
Sure, go for it. Yes, he faced off against Tyler Breeze in a non-title match, and it was
Santos Escobar and Tyler Breeze. I thought was great. Like, because that opened the show, didn't it?
The Dane and Maverick Undisputed Era thing opened the show, but this was right after it.
So. Oh, okay, gotcha. I couldn't remember the order, but like, I kind of dig this weird tertiary story between Breezango and Legado del Fantasma. Like, Legado del Fantasma talking about legacy and all this stuff, and then Breezango being like, no, like, we're not trying to take away your legacy. We are professional wrestlers and we're serious about this. Like, Tyler Breeze, when he came out for his entrance, he wasn't taking selfies, he wasn't smiling, he wasn't, you know, doing his normal Tyler Breeze shtick. He was serious. He was like, I'm gonna do this and take care of it. And I thought they had a really good match. And I'm very into the stable of incredibly attractive Mexican men who just want to beat people up.
Look, Sandra, it's a tough job to watch it, but somebody's got to do it. Do you
exactly.
know what I mean? And that's what we need to do.
You know what? I will take that sacrifice.
Yeah. Like,
upon myself.
I'm into the Breezango stuff with the faction. The Isaiah Scott bit I'm not as into, but I get that they're trying to elevate him a little bit. He's someone who is like, yeah, we maybe need some vignettes on him, we need something to kind of just have
him
pop.
Yeah, he feels like he's just kind of floating around. He feels like just another guy who doesn't really have it, because we're building to Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Santos Escobar for the title, right?
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, maybe that match will be great. I don't know if he wins it, and then they can, you know, build him as a character a little bit more if he's the champion and have Santos Escobar do something else. I don't really know what's going to happen there. I mean, honestly, until you mentioned his name, I was like, oh, right, he did come out to, like, even the score at the end. But I he's great. Like, he's obviously great. Like, I loved him in Lucha Underground, and I really do enjoy his wrestling. But I just don't think that he has found his thing yet. He feels like he's still at the stage where Cameron Grimes just wore a hat. But he doesn't have a hat.
Yeah, that is true. Do you remember that? That was a good time. Overall, though, NXT...
I like Cameron Grimes way more now. I was so happy he won in the main event. I was like, yes, I'm 100% in on the Cameron Grimes train now. Cameron Grimes!
He is better now. But it's not that he's been bad. It's taking time to kind of develop a little bit. But he's good. He's really fun.
Like, since he's just become, like... He still wears the hat, which is helpful, but now he's become, like, mouthy, self-absorbed dude as well, and he just seems kind of greasy, and you kind of just want to hate him because he's so smarmy, and that makes him interesting to me.
So, I thought NXT, though, the whole show was really easy to watch. I sometimes find I get bored with NXT, but I didn't get bored this week at all, and I'm just kind of... didn't find I wanted to skip anything. These are all...
No, it was really good things. Even Mia Yim versus Indy Hartwell felt like it had something... We didn't talk about Keith Lee and the Fireball.
Of course we didn't. And why? So Keith Lee and Karrion Kross are going to do a contract signing, and Karrion Kross signs...
That's what opened the show, was Karrion Kross versus Danny Burch. And Danny Burch coming out to attack Karrion Kross right away and being like, start the match. That was great. That was great stuff. Loved it.
That was fun. But the fireball that Keith Lee had was really timed well. Fireballs are something where it's very, very difficult to act that and not feel like a complete cheeseball. And Keith Lee did that, which is a big compliment to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it surprised me. I did not expect a fireball in a contract, right? So now, apparently, Karrion Kross and Scarlett do have some sort of spooky superpowers, which I'm totally here for. And I think Keith Lee did sell it well. It was kind of funny seeing him, like, roll around on the ground and stuff. And there's a gif of it where it kind of, like, speeds it up. And it was making me laugh quite a lot last night. But it was surprising, and it added an element of, like, seriousness. Keith Lee just keeps getting attacked by weird things, right? Like, he's taken pipes to the throat and pipes to the knees and now a fireball to the face. Like, they really are like, he is a big monster man and we need to chop him down with weapons and spookery.
And I mean, this, I feel like this got us far more towards what we want from this feud than we've had before. Because before it's just been like, here's an hourglass, it's being tipped upside down, and it's like, blah. Whereas this felt like we got, story, something happened, consequence, fireball. There was a fireball.
There was a fireball. And Scarlett's like, stare at Keith Lee as he was picking up the contract and stuff. And now we know that the match is official for TakeOver. Like, it wasn't going to be official for TakeOver. But, like, obviously now it is official for TakeOver. I'm kind of into it. Like, I'm more into it after the fireball to the face. And then having Mia Yim get interviewed before her match. You know, she was like, I almost didn't make it back from the hospital. Like, I barely made it back for this match, but I need to go focus. Like, it makes sense that the roving reporters backstage in NXT would want to ask Mia Yim about Keith Lee's status. But I like the fact that she's like, hey, I need to go do this now. And I thought, like, they made it seem like Indy Hartwell might beat Mia Yim on a whim or on a fluke or whatever, because Mia was distracted by... Keith Lee's situation, and he's in hospital and had a fire to the face. So I don't know. I thought it all tied together really well.
The show was great. The show was just really fun. AEW this week, not as much.
Like, no.
It was fine, but
it was a good show. It's not like it was bad or anything, but it happened.
Yeah, so let's go through it. So we opened the show with the Young Bucks and the Dark Order. It's Evelyn Owens and Stu Grayson. They had a pretty decent match, actually. I mean, I hate the Dark Order, and I don't really like Young Bucks matches. So if I thought this was okay, then that's probably the best compliment you're going to get for it, is that I thought it was decent. And the Young Bucks got the win. So it was fine. Any thoughts on the match?
I mean, I would have preferred the Young Bucks not get the win, because I normally prefer that the Young Bucks not get the win. It was fine, though. It was fun. It was chaotic. They brawled and stuff.
So then we got MJF coming out, and he was doing like a campaign thing, and he was talking about how, you know, he got Nina, the staffer, to show polling that shows him winning the AEW championship, and it was like 500% to minus 1,000%. And he's talking about Dictator John and all this kind of stuff. And then it all leads to Moxley's music hits. And then
you notice him when he walked down the hall and shoved the security guard? And
the Samoa Joe reference.
Until it was pointed out to me. But yeah, the Samoa Joe reference, which I thought was great.
Yeah, which if you've not seen it, and yeah, just Google it. It's an NXT thing when he was an extra from a few years ago that he played up when in his kind of walkthrough. So he sends all his goons, including Wardlow, to go and sort of, you know, catch Moxley in the crowd, and then of course Moxley comes from the back through the normal entrance and comes in and hits a great paradigm shift on MJF. And then he cuts this promo. The only part of this, like, it was just so weird. It was like, so Moxley goes backstage to do a promo to camera, and in the background, I can see Tony Khan in a pair of shorts at like the gorilla position, and it's like he's watching the promo, and I was like, this is so weird. Like, it's just it was so oddly laid out. But I was going to ask you, because there's been some sort of criticism online. Some people are saying that the MJF campaign stuff has already run its course and they're not enjoying it. I'm curious how this segment worked for you or didn't, and how did it either make you more excited or lessen your enthusiasm for Moxley and MJF at All Out?
I think it did not heighten my excitement, but it did not destroy my excitement for Moxley versus MJF. I think it's kind of even keel for me. Like, I like the campaign stuff and I think it's good, but I am kind of ready to get to the match at this point. But I don't think it's like run its course. Like, it's gotten stale. It's been 2 weeks that he's been doing this. It's not like he's been doing this for, I don't know, years. He's not Dolph Ziggler here. No,
you always have to get Dolph in there.
Well, because he just keeps existing and it's a problem for me. But no, like, I think it's fine. I think it's, I don't know if it's as effective as just like MJF promos would be, because I feel like the campaign thing kind of hampers him a little bit, but maybe that's good because then he's not just cutting standard MJF promos. I think his first promo when he came back, I think was way better, but it's fun enough. And it's him being completely up his own ass, right? Like, and he thinks that he's just the best and, you know, he's better than everyone and we know it. He's kind of tweaked that catchphrase to "you deserve better." And I kind of like the variety of it. I don't know. Is it still working for you? I know you liked it last week.
Yeah, no, I still really dig it. I think that he's doing something different, which I think works for what this is. Like, obviously he's only going to do this to All Out and then he'll go back to what he was doing before or whatever. I think he's just being a smarmy arsehole and he's making people want to see him get beat up, which is kind of the point of being a heel.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he's like, doing a good job of it.
Yeah, no, he's a shit-talking heel, and he's great at it.
So yeah, I thought that was really good. We also had this, Alex Marvez was talking to Matt Hardy, and then Matt Hardy just, like, I thought he was now Matthew Hardy, but he did go in and out of character.
I don't really know what that means.
And then he ends up attacking somebody who he thought was Sammy when it was just a referee. So, poor referee.
I figured it was not going to be Sammy because it was someone that was like Sammy sized in a hat. And I think that part of it's good. Like, I mean, Matt Hardy's promo explaining himself and just kind of being like, I'm okay. It's very frustrating that I can't wrestle because I'm not cleared. But him attacking someone who looked like Sammy, I thought was an interesting wrinkle because it shows that he is desperate to get back at Sammy Guevara for taking him out. And I think that adds something to the story.
So Cody had a match with Scorpio Sky, and I think that I've realized now, because I think we're maybe week 6 or 7, there's been about 6 or 7 open challenges I think that Cody's had. I don't think his open challenges are that great, to be perfectly honest. I feel like every week I watch it and I'm always disappointed by it, because I just think that it's like, I mean, the Eddie Kingston
was great.
The Eddie Kingston one was my favorite, but I mean, it's like...
And the Jungle Boy one was really good.
Yeah, it was good, but it wasn't like... I mean, I wouldn't have remembered there was a Jungle Boy one had you not brought it up. And I feel like because we're, I guess, as a fan, you always you compare to the John Cena Open Challenge of 2015. That was the big one that people would compare it to. And I still think Cody's a really good character. I like the idea that he's maybe slowly turning heel with his entourage. I think we get a new person every week that joins him. But I just, again, felt... I mean, Scorpio Sky kicked out the crossroads. That was good, but it just didn't feel epic. And I wondered, am I alone in that?
Oh, it doesn't feel epic. And I don't think it feels epic because there is no part of me that thinks that Cody's going to get beat at this point, especially not by someone like Scorpio Sky. Like, and I like Scorpio Sky. I think he's very good. But I also feel like a guy who's in a tag team, who's not a singles dude, like... when they beat Cody, it's going to be a big story, right? Like, it's going to have something that has build up and it's going to be important. And that just doesn't feel like it's there. And Cody Rhodes, I'm not saying that he's not a good wrestler. Like, he's very, very good at his job. But I think Cody Rhodes, a lot of what makes Cody Rhodes so good is his ability to harness the crowd or get the crowd behind or against him. And that not being there right now, I think, is hurting this. And like, just the haphazard choosing of opponents is strange. Like, I like the fact that the Open Challenge is giving us, you know, people from the independent scene, and I'm also like, people more from my world. Like Eddie Kingston coming in and killing it, like being incredible. I want more stuff like that. Like, I want to see other people answer the Open Challenge from outside. I don't know. Like, I think it lacks drama and it's just starting to feel repetitive in a way. And I think maybe that's why it's more epic, because I enjoyed the earlier on ones when it was less, like when we hadn't seen as many of them, maybe, because it is all starting to feel kind of similar and the same. And Cody does feel like kind of the big guy atop the mountain to beat. So I don't hate it. And I still like the concept of the Open Challenge, but I can't say that I was like glued to my television during this match either.
Yeah, I didn't feel glued, really, at all.
But I did with the Eddie Kingston one.
The Kingston one's probably the exception, I guess, to the rule, because
yeah,
that one was great.
Well, and like the Warhorse match, obviously, like I was very excited to see Warhorse on my TV, so I was really excited about that. But I was just kind of bummed that they didn't present Warhorse as like Warhorse, right? Like Eddie Kingston got a promo, Warhorse didn't get a promo, which was very frustrating to me. But yeah, like I think there are other people that they could bring in for the Open Challenge before this is done. But I kind of feel like when Cody gets beat, I still feel like it's going to be either like someone from the outside or Darby Allin, because that's going to be Darby Allin's like final vanquishing of Cody Rhodes after Cody turns heel, which seems like is coming.
It feels that we're on the route to that. Mm-hmm. For sure. But yeah, I just felt really very underwhelmed. Post-match, we saw Brody Lee on the big screen. He basically cuts a promo on Cody, and it's going to be Brody and Cody. Brody and Cody.
Brody and Cody at...
Next Saturday.
I'm excited. I know you don't like the Dark Order, but I still like the Dark Order, and I love Brody Lee so much, and I'm really excited for Brody Lee versus Cody Rhodes. I think it's going
to
be good.
I think that's got a potential to be really good, because...
And Brody Lee's doing the thing where he has the old TNT title belt, like the fake, the placeholder one, and Cody actually had the new one on this episode, like the finished final...
Yeah, he's now got it, finally, yep.
Gold pretty one, which I think does look great. Like, I think it looks very snazzy. And yeah, so I don't know, when Brody Lee came up on the screen and was like, I'm going to take this from you, I was like, ooh, yes, I will be making some decisions if that's not in the first hour of AEW, because I don't know if I'm going to watch. I'm still trying to decide whether I'm going to watch just AEW and then watch the first half of TakeOver like later, or if I'm going to switch over to TakeOver and finish AEW later. Like, they're making me make hard choices.
Which is a good place to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we also had on the show, we had Hangman Page and Kenny Omega versus Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. This is probably my favorite thing on the show. I really liked this match. For whatever reason, Omega and Page as a team who kind of shouldn't be together work for me. Like, I loved earlier in the show where Page and Omega were asked about who their favorite tag teams are. And like, as Page is starting to answer it, Omega interrupts and says the Young Bucks. I just think the story that they kind of tell with that is really clever. And Luchasaurus, it feels like Luchasaurus again. You know, when he first came back and he kind of felt very restricted in what he could do. So I thought this match was a ton of fun. What did you make of it?
Yeah, no, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Of course it was going to be good. They're all great. No, the promo that you just mentioned, though, I thought was really interesting because, you know, it was Tag Team Appreciation Night and, you know, people were being interviewed about their favorite tag teams. And when Kenny Omega was like, the Young Bucks are my favorite tag team, and Adam Page just looks a little hurt. And he's like, I mean, I thought you would say us. And Kenny Omega's like, well, we're just two singles guys who are in a tag team and happen to be the champions right now, which, you know, was a dig at internet criticism or whatever. But also it furthers the elitists being dicks to Adam Page and not taking him seriously, right? Like if Kenny Omega's like, yeah, well, we're not even a real tag team after all this time of being champions, I think that's hurtful.
Arsehole. Absolute arsehole.
Just saying.
But we knew he was an arsehole. Do you know what I mean?
I know, but I just think the story is so good, and I just want Adam Page to join FTR and, like, kick the elitist to the curb.
Yeah, I want to see it as well. Then we had on the show the Tag Team Appreciation Night. Can we just take a moment? So the tag match before this was my favorite match. My favorite segment on the show would probably be this Tag Team Appreciation Night, but can we talk about Ricky Morton and
the
his
The glory
style?
That is Ricky Morton? He's like, an icon, Kenny.
He was wearing what can only be described as like a jacket that Blanche Devereaux would wear in the Golden Girls.
100%. This would 100% belong. It was like a black sparkly jacket with a Rock and Roll Express t-shirt underneath, I believe.
Yep.
I can't remember exactly what trousers he was wearing, but they were fairly nondescript. And then blue chucks. He looked incredible.
He did look very good. So he's out there and they've got the Rock and Roll Express, they've got the Young Bucks, they've got FTR, and they've got Arn and Tully. And like the Bucks are doing this kind of like, you know, thanks thing, which just sounds so insincere. Like just
everything they do sounds insincere.
You know, I always remember that Pete Burns, the singer of Dead or Alive, when he was on Celebrity Big Brother in the UK, he was on with this like Baywatch girl, Tracy somebody. She was like a mixed race girl who was on Baywatch in the 90s. But anyway,
I never watched Baywatch.
And she was very like quiet and whatever. And Pete Burns would just like say these horrific things to people. And he said something to Tracy that I think sometimes applies to the Young Bucks. The line is, you're insincere to the point of nausea.
Mm-hmm.
And then FTR, they take the mic and it's just fucking, you know, we love wrestling, we love you guys, thanks for everything that you do. Ricky Morton's happy. You know, Arn's getting involved. And then Tully Blanchard is not happy at being here for this shit. He's not interested. And he's like, you know, Tom Brady's the best quarterback. That's a football reference, I believe.
Yes.
Tom Brady's the best quarterback because he has the most rings. Neither of these teams are the champions. And what was so clever about what he was doing here was that he was talking about, we're all standing here sucking each other off. He didn't say that, obviously. When, like, neither of these teams are the champions.
So, because he was like, what makes you the champion is when you have gold around your waist.
Mm-hmm. And then he brings up the thing with Arn. He's like, I've not forgotten what you did to me last year. And then Sean Spears comes out. And then, in the end, FTR jump the Rock and Roll Express. And when Ricky Morton sold the Spike Pile Driver, it gave me life, Sondra.
It was incredible. It was incredible. So is this meant to be FTR being heels?
I think so.
Because that's the part of it that I'm just kind of like, I don't know how I feel about FTR being heels, because I love them. And I think that they are just so correct in everything that they say. And I think the Young Bucks are just so Young Bucky. Yes. I just like couldn't come up with a better term than to just describe them with their own selves.
Young Bucky.
Young Bucky. But they are, right? Like they're just, ugh.
They are very Young Bucky.
I just don't like them. So, you know, like, I'm not going to cheer against FTR. Like, FTR made this segment awesome.
They did. It was really fun. And it was just a good progression of storyline, and I mean, you can tell they are trying to hold off the FTR Young Bucks thing for now. But I think what they're doing really well is there's so many different elements of this that you don't know what's going to happen. Like, so you've got Arn and Tully, who were both scouting FTR the other week. You've got Paige, who FTR saved. You've got the Bucks, who are with Omega, who are all in the Elite. You've got all these different variables, and you don't know how it's going to play out. And it feels like it's variables that you're meant to be pondering, as opposed to ones that we make up in our own head.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the fact that they're keeping FTR and Young Bucks, like, they kind of keep having these face-offs too, but they're not, like, building the match yet. I think it's going to make it more of a slow burn, and it's going to make us want it more by the time we get there, which is nice.
Yeah, I agree. So that segment was great. We should mention Hikaru Shida faced Heather Monroe, and, you know, she beat her in a couple of minutes, and then there was an interview with Shivani, and she's basically, you know, I'll take on all comers. And it's like, where are the comers?
Can it would be really, really cool. Like, and here's a crazy idea for you. I'm just going to float this out there. I know that this sounds like crazy talk. Wouldn't it be crazy if we could name even one comer who's coming after that title? Wouldn't it be a concept if they had built any other women wrestlers on their show to the point where I was like, oh, I would like to see this person challenge for the title, please.
Yep. I mean, and they've announced yesterday that they've released Sadie Gibbs and Bea Priestley, which obviously, because of international reasons, they can't use them. So, you know, it is what it is. But and Penelope Ford did really well when she had that great match not too long ago.
Well, yeah, no, I loved the Penelope Ford Hikaru Shida match, but we've seen it.
Nyla Rose,
is she going to come back after her title? Like, I wouldn't be mad about that necessarily, because I think Hikaru Shida and Nyla Rose did great when they wrestled before.
Should we just get Ariane back?
There's no indication of that.
Let's get Ariane back in.
Oh, gosh. At this point, why the fuck not? What happened on Deadly Draw this week? Because I totally forgot to watch it.
I didn't watch it this week, but I will. What happened on Deadly Draw?
AEW is doing great at building their women's roster, you guys. I'm so frustrated. I'm so frustrated. Like, NXT is incredible. Raw and SmackDown have all these great women's stories going on. Like, I am praising main roster WWE over AEW for a thing that should not be happening.
Big Swole and Little Swole, who's Nicole Savoy.
Nicole Savoy and Big Swole are together? That's cool.
They advanced over Rachel, Chanel, and Leva Bates. I've not watched it, but it sounds interesting. They had Rachel Ellering and Dasha.
I do kind of want to see that,
against Ivelisse and Diamante, and then Ivelisse and Diamante won. So they're supposed to say anything. I mean, the thing that I will say is that they are putting the finals are going to be on this Saturday's Dynamite. So I think that's a good idea. Like, do the show. Because Brandi Rhodes actually did an interview, which I thought was worth bringing up here, because she was asked about the women's division. And she was like, I don't book the women's division. So, like, the criticisms of that, I can't really do anything about. All that I have fought to do is to get the tournament. And the reason behind us doing the tournament on YouTube is because if we don't do it on YouTube and make it its own show, then we won't have the time on the main show. So
you could find the time if it were a priority.
I think the issue is that, like, I don't think a lot of the stuff on the Deadly Draw really matters enough to be on the main show. But the problem is that at some point you have to kind of put some dross on the show to get somewhere. Like, you have to build at some point. So, but I mean Big Swole, she's decent. Leva Bates, I mean, I think the librarian thing, I just don't think it's working. I think she's,
well, and she's not very good at wrestling either.
No, so that's a problem. I heard Dasha looked good, so
yeah. And I mean, Nicole Savoy is very good. She's never been, like, my favorite ever, but, like, she's incredibly skilled. She was Shimmer champion for, like, a long time.
So next week this Monday, the semifinals are the Swoles against the Nightmare Sisters and Ivelisse and Diamante against Tay Conti and Anna Jay.
You know what? I think I'm going to really try and tune into that.
Then the main event of the show was Orange Cassidy versus Chris Jericho. And it was so sloppy.
I didn't hate it. I was into it.
It was good. But... I like the characters. I like the story. But it's like, it was really sloppy. And the finish, yes. My lord, the finish. Like, did they fuck the finish? Explain the finish to me.
I am still kind of confused about the finish. So, I watched it twice.
Because we should mention, they did this thing earlier. They've signed Mike Chioda, which is great because Mike Chioda is brilliant. And Jericho did a segment with him earlier on. We said, you know, you need to do the right thing. And then Hager came out at one point to hit Cassidy for a really good near fall. And then Jericho... Cassidy pulls Jericho into this like mousetrap pin combination thing, but like it looked like it was just really botched.
I don't know. It was strange because it was after Jericho had like he was gonna hit Orange Cassidy with something, wasn't he? Like, did he have a chair or I can't remember what he was carrying? But he was like gonna hit Orange Cassidy, and he was telling Mike Chioda to turn around, right? So he was like, "You turn around so that you don't see me do this dastardly thing." And then Mike Chioda looked like he was going to, like, maybe turn around and be on Jericho's side. But then he was like, no, I have to be, like, an upstanding referee. Which, like, shout out to Mike Chioda for actually enforcing the rules. And, like, a lot of the AEW referees. And I love Bryce and I love Aubrey and I love them very much. But, like, they are not great at keeping order in matches on this particular program sometimes. But so, I mean, it felt like there was, I don't really understand the Jericho and Chioda drama. You know how I feel about referees not just enforcing the rules. Like, I just want rules and logic and order in my wrestling.
Rules help control the fun.
Rules do help control the fun, because if there are no rules to break, then where's the drama in the match?
It's anarchy.
So, yes, and it's just too much for me. It's overwhelming. So, I don't know. I liked the match and I love the story behind it. Like, I love that Jericho's jacket keeps getting oranger and for some reason is like half pink this week because orange juice totally works that way? Question mark. Like, it's a funny running visual gag, right? Like, it is the most Jericho thing ever. But yeah, the finish did feel very strange and like some of the shenanigans and stuff. I just don't know if it hit the way that they wanted it to. But I don't know. It's not like the match was bad.
It wasn't as good as the first one.
There was definitely some good stuff. And Orange Cassidy felt, you know, he felt on fire and he felt like...
And he won. He beat Chris Jericho. I mean, it wasn't as good as their first match, which is a shame.
I don't think it was as good as their... And we were a little bit underwhelmed by their first match, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was as good as their first match. I just, you know, like, I think Jericho... He's very hit or miss for me, like in whether his matches work.
But Jericho's always been hit or miss, like as a wrestler. Like, he's a great character, like arguably one of the best ever. But as a wrestler, he is, when he's on, he's brilliant. But like, when it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And like, I think Orange Cassidy is the better wrestler in this match for sure.
Like, and like, I mean, I don't know if we're building to like a rubber match at All Out, but like, I don't really know if I want to see it again. Because,
well, I do for the story, but I don't know if I want to see it again for the match, because it doesn't feel over, right? Like, they were acting like this was a fluke win for him. Like, he caught Chris Jericho. Jericho was just like aghast that he had been pinned, because I mean, Chris Jericho doesn't get beat that often, right? So for Orange Cassidy to beat him, especially after an attack from Hager, it did feel like, oh yeah, that's happened, but it didn't feel like the big triumphant victory that it should have. So I feel like we're getting it again, but I think maybe there should be some sort of stipulation or something, like put them in a cage or something like that.
That would be helpful. But yeah, I mean, I thought overall this, I mean, NXT, or AEW rather, won again.
They won like by a really significant margin, right? And I thought NXT was way better as a show.
Yeah, same. I think, I what was the numbers? Hold on. AEW NXT numbers. What was this week's? August the 12th, mm-hmm. 2020. What was the numbers? Okay, the viewing numbers for the shows on Wednesday. AEW did 792,000 viewers and NXT did 619,000.
That's quite down from last week's numbers.
Yeah. So I'm curious if this week's NXT being really good will make them have a bigger number next week, but then I guess I don't know. Maybe because but NXT.
Well, but next week they don't have AEW head to head either.
Yeah, so they in theory should be able to do well, maybe 900,000 on their own.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. But that is it for us. We will be back soon. We're always podcasting, Sandra. I don't know what the fuck we're doing next.
We're always fine. Yeah, we'll be back. We will be back.
The clarification there was really solid. We will be back.
We will be back. We'll be back for an overrun this weekend, and mm-hmm. we'll be back with Retro ITR on Patreon this weekend, and we'll be back with TakeOver and the main show like a week from, well, we're going to record on Sunday, so it'll be a little bit more than a week that...
Yeah,
it, like in between shows, because AEW's schedule just decided to make things even more difficult for us.
But I mean, August. I mean, I know you're about to do the plugs. August is a pretty great month to do Patreon though, because not only have we got the TakeOver review and the SummerSlam review, the following week we then have the Retro SummerSlam review where Finn will be coming in and we'll be talking about SummerSlam 2000. So there's a lot going on. And since David McCutcheon has not died, I think we're doing an over to you.
That would be excellent. So, I would love to listen to an over to you. So, and I'm very happy that David McCutcheon is with us.
Same. I'm glad he's alive. Anyway, yeah, what are the plugs?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Find us on Instagram. I'm at SandraRuth. He's at MCINTOKNNY at Inside_the Ropes on Instagram as well, because that's actually the same handle, which makes it so much easier. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, like Kenny was saying, it is a great month to join us and support us, and we appreciate everyone who keeps us going there, because you are the reason that we are able to do this. We can't run live events right now, so Patreon support is pretty much what keeps this show running, and there's tons of stuff. We do Retro ITR every week, where we go through the year 2000, and I pretty much lose my mind, and question many things, and I'm very complimentary toward Chris Jericho in the year 2020 at like being a great character. That is not the case in the year 2000, as you may guess. So yeah, there's tons of stuff on Patreon. youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for clips from our live events from back when we could do live events before a virus fucked everything, and it also interviews that Kenny's been doing in quarantines. Yep. COVID can just eat a big bag of rotten dicks is how we feel about it. But if you want to remember when we did live events, there are clips of that at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, and also some really fun interviews that Kenny's done with people like FTR and Tama Tonga, and you know, some of the Zoom calls that you've been doing lately have been just a lot of fun too. And I think that is all of the plugs.
Great. Okay, well, to play us out, let's play Orange Cassidy's theme, since he got the big one over Chris Jericho. And we'll be back next week with the Go Home NXT before TakeOver and the Saturday night AEW Dynamite. So lots to talk about. We'll be back with more next week. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Now, with the best friends.